go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you into Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. We will continue our preview of the upcoming regular season matchups. We'll take a look at the New Orleans Saints today. Jeff Duncan of the New Orleans Times-Picayune will be joining us a little bit later on in the program. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the show, 201-939-4513. You give us a ring, or you could chime in via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat.
So you say Picayune. I lived in New Orleans for 3 years. I called it the Picayune. It's fun.
I've only heard it as Picayune.
No, I know. So. It's very interesting. When you live in New Orleans, like there's so many, because it's Nolens. It's New Orleans.
The dialect and so forth.
Yes.
Correct.
The dialect.
A lot of different ways.
Yes, it is. It's just, but it's just funny. It's the Picayune.
Picayune.
Right.
That's a new one. I learned something new.
But you call it
the Picayune.
Picayune. It's, yes. And you're probably accurate the way that you say it more so than I.
Well, but I'm sure the local people who follow and read the paper, it's probably everyday part of their language.
Yeah, I don't think they want to use that extra syllable.
There you go.
Yeah.
We don't charge by the syllable. They're entitled. No worries. No concerns.
So, but I'm really excited to talk to him. And again, let's throw out that date. The Giants take on the New Orleans Saints in the Big Easy. Again, I lived there 3 years. I absolutely loved it. November 1st. That's a 1 o'clock game. And really interested to talk to our guest because, number one, what a horrible year the Saints had. I think probably one of the biggest surprises in the NFL last year in regard to the Saints and what a non-competitive division that was.
Everybody below 500.
And number two, man, no Jimmy Graham. I'm a big Brandon Cooks. They call him the Cookie Monster. I'm a big fan from Oregon State. I love that kid. Can't wait to see what he can do this year. Definitely a guy on my radar in regard to my fantasy football drafts.
Had a good rookie year. Unfortunately,
yeah.
He got hurt.
And then of course they add C.J. Spiller to that backfield.
From Buffalo.
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited to talk to him to kind of get a feel like what can we realistically expect from the Saints this year.
Also, some new faces on defense, and that's where they really are focusing to improve the team, considering the struggles last season. So we'll certainly get into the Saints over the course of the program. We also want to mention today is a significant date. It is July 15th. And 4 p.m. Eastern is the deadline for all players who were given the franchise tag to work out long-term deals with their respective players. Now, Jason Pierre-Paul, as you know, was given the franchise tag by the Giants, so they have until 4 p.m. Eastern to work out a long-term deal. Now, what happens once 4 p.m. Eastern passes and no long-term deal, let's say hypothetically, doesn't come about? Well, it doesn't really change anything. It really comes down to when the franchise tender is signed. The tender is still out there. JPP has yet to sign it, but he can still sign it after the 4 p.m. Eastern deadline. That doesn't change anything in terms of his contractual status. The only thing that today is of note is the fact that once 4 p.m. Eastern passes, you no longer can work out a long-term deal with the player that was given the franchise tag.
But I just, and again, not that I know anything, but my gut was telling me that there was not going to be a long-term deal that JPP's camp was going to agree to. I think JPP wanted to play with the tag this year based on kind of some of the comments that I was hearing from the JPP camp. I think the Giants were very aware of that. But now, again, just to kind of fill Giants fans in regard to why JPP might not be so aggressive in signing the tender, and that is, hypothetically speaking, let's say JPP signs the tender, okay? Obviously, because of the injury that he suffered, which is a non-football injury, the Giants now have an opportunity, if he is not ready to go regular season game one, to put him in the non-injury perform, right? Non-football injury list. And if you are on that list, you can't play for a minimum of 6 weeks. So, and JPP would not get paid those 6 weeks. So for the JPP camp, they're looking at this and saying, hey, what if JPP is able to play week three? What if JPP is able to play week four? Why are we going to sign this when there's a possibility that he could play during a week prior to week six, come back, pass the physical, and suit up and play for the Giants. So that's the JPP camp philosophy. You know, obviously the Giants want him to sign and get him in here and get their doctors to look at him and have him rehab properly here with the organization. So it's unfortunate that the organization, JPP, are kind of on two separate sides of the coin. But it is what it is. But I just wanted to kind of explain to folks out there listening and watching, you know, what the JPP camp's philosophy is right now. They might feel that he will be ready before week six. And I want to say it's a little over $700,000 a game that he would not be making if he did sign, was on that non-injury list, and was not able to play until week seven. So that's a lot of money. At least for me, that's a lot of money.
Well, in terms
it's more
of,
than I make a year. He makes it a game.
In terms of at least moving forward, for the Giants' sake and JPP's sake, there is no hard deadline for him to sign the franchise tender. I think that's important to at least throw out there. As I mentioned, 4 p.m. Eastern deadline to work out a long-term deal, but then they're not necessarily on the clock in terms of when JPP can sign the franchise tender. So that is at least the layout of the land in terms of the logistics for what is on deck today across the NFL. This is not just the New York Giants. There's a lot of players that were given the franchise tender. Dez Bryant to the Cowboys, Demaryius Thomas to the Broncos, Justin Houston of the Kansas City Chiefs. That's another guy to throw out there. So all of those teams are trying to work out long-term deals potentially with their respective players. If not, then it looks as if they will be working under the franchise tag. We'll try to squeeze in a number of calls before Jeff Duncan joins us in a little bit to discuss the Saints. So the lines are open at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Abdul in Minneapolis gets us going here on a Wednesday. Abdul, what's happening?
Just to start off, I'll just start saying that I'm really positive about this season. I feel really happy. That out of the way, hear my complaints.
thanks for prefacing. Now you're going to drop it.
Exactly. Well, I was looking at the potential for roster this year, and I noticed once again, Jerry Reese has left us short at tackle, offensive line, and cornerback. And I think he's done this year after year after year. And it's kind of disheartening because it seems like, you know, he doesn't learn from his mistakes. I understand that we spent, you know, a couple of high draft picks on offensive line, but, you know, it was one of our weakest parts of the team last year. And same with our cornerbacks. We have two great starting cornerbacks, but after that, we have no depth. And I don't understand, if you look at free agency, we signed Selby. We signed the receiver slash
Dwayne Harris, you're talking about.
Guy who plays special teams, Dwayne Harris. Couldn't that money have been spent? You know, I understand we need some girth, but we got that guy from the Jets. It seems like Dwayne Harris and Selby were just kind of, I think the money would have been better spent on a tackle or a cornerback. And now I look at our roster, and those are the two positions that are arguably some of the most important positions on the field. And once again, we're thin at that. The same thing happens over and over and over again. We're always stocked on defensive line and at receiver every year. But O-line and cornerback is something we're always scrambling to, you know, just to patch up or fix.
Well, keep in mind, Abdul, remember, they addressed the offensive line through the draft by drafting Ereck Flowers. So, you know, there's a variety of ways you can add depth. You don't have to just do it through free agency.
I understand that.
In terms of the corners,
is not depth.
Well, I'm not, but, okay, you know, we'll see how the competition plays out,
deep.
Obviously.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said we're going to see how the competition plays out in terms of the depth department come training camp. I mean, that really has yet to be determined in terms of where players are lined up behind the projected starters.
The line.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, I don't think anybody has been defined as specifically a backup at this spot versus that spot. A lot of that is going to play out during the course of training camp. So, you know, when you look at the depth chart, I think roles haven't necessarily been fully assigned based on who was brought in via the draft and free agency.
But we also have no talent. We don't have talent. We have the same guy who played guard last year who couldn't run block, and we have the guy, Newhouse, we signed for Green Bay, who was one of the worst tackles in the league. You know, he does it on the cheap every year. and it seems like it always bites us.
Well, you got to keep in mind, Abdul, a lot of those positions that you're referring to, the corners and the tackles on the free agent market this season, and I'll bring it up, just look at the contractual offers that those players got. I mean, a lot of money was being spent across the league on those specific positions, and most of those teams needed starters. You know, for a backup corner, it's hard to designate so much money out of your cap to that backup position when you know you already have Prince and DRC lined up as your two starters. So, it's very difficult to then afford a third starting caliber corner who may not get nearly as many reps. I mean, you have to designate your money very carefully when you try to monopolize the most out of the salary cap.
So all that money at Dwayne Harris? That money that Dwayne Harris could have gotten as a decent cornerback or
well, keep in mind, special teams, but Abdul, let's not forget special teams is also an area that the Giants were looking to improve upon this season in terms of the return
game. I hear you.
Dwayne Harris is also a gunner who was up there in special teams tackles. I mean, I think when you're looking at the finances tied to him, it's almost as if most people are looking at him as a one-dimensional player, and we have yet to see, number one, how much they're going to utilize him as a wide receiver, but there's potential there. And Dwayne Harris plays on all the special teams. He's not just a return guy. He's going to be on the coverage teams as well. So you're trying to maximize value out of that one individual.
Well, as I said, I feel really positive about this upcoming team. I'm nervous that we're really thin at two major positions. And my second question is, it's kind of a out of the box question. Has it been an example of a defensive lineman being switched over, converted to an offensive lineman? Sorry, a defensive lineman being switched over, converted to an offensive lineman. And I say this because yesterday Justin Pugh posted a picture on Instagram about him working out. And I saw a picture of that German guy who plays tackle.
Marcus Kuhn.
There was some talk last year that that might happen, and it never materialized. So,
he's a big body. He's athletic. I just hit me when I saw how big he was and, a potential. If it's ever happened.
It's interesting. There was talk about it last year, but I don't know if it was just tongue-in-cheek, having fun. I will say this. Listen, it's got to be difficult, I think, to go from a defensive lineman where you're just pinning your ears back and you're getting after a quarterback or you're trying to stop a running back or whatever, to have to go to the opposite side of the line and be, as I call him, a dancing bear, with all due respect. Knowing Kuhn and knowing how much he loves football, I think any opportunity for him to get on the football field just to play, I think he'd be all for it. But, who knows? Who knows if that's something that the coaching staff would seriously consider. But, yeah, there was
Has that happened in the NFL? Has it been an example of that happening?
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. I mean, I've seen secondary players play both offense and defense.
Right.
I'm sure there may have been an example where somebody was utilized, even if it was for maybe goal line plays or something to that degree. J.J. Watt, we've seen him be utilized on both sides, not necessarily as an offensive lineman, but J.J. Watt, who is a defensive lineman, also gets lined up with the offensive lineman. He's not necessarily playing a tackle position, but they do put him in similar positions. So I think you could be creative in maybe having a package of plays to try to utilize a defensive lineman. I don't know necessarily if there's been enough documented players out there who have formally lined up on both sides. Remember, you got to limit X amount of snaps that you can get out of a player. You don't want to run him into the ground. So that would be interesting to check. I'll try to see if we can, through our research, to see if there's an example. I was doing a little right now. Nobody came to mind.
All right. Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate
it. You got
it,
Abdul. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's go to Connecticut. Marco standing by. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, Marco. What do you got?
Oh, nothing much. I wanted to talk JPP. This is an interesting day, because leading into this July 15th day, everyone had thought that, maybe it would come right up until today and he would sign the tag or something, some type of contract would happen. Now it's a little bit of an unknown. And what's also interesting is Justin Houston, who is similar situation to Pierre Paul. He just signed a long-term deal with the Chiefs today, or else he would have been in the same case can't negotiate a deal until next year. So you have to wonder, Jason Pierre-Paul, also 26 years old, like Justin Houston, sees the contract he's getting, and there's some what-ifs there. I had a question and then a comment. If he does not sign today, the franchise tender, can that be signed any time during training camp?
Yes, it can be signed at any time.
Okay. And if it's so, until it is signed, he remains not under contract, basically a holdout?
Correct. I mean, he's not technically under contract, but it's not as if he's considered an unrestricted free agent who can all of a sudden talk to a variety of different teams. And, Marco, we got to let you go. We're up against the clock here with a guest, but we'll continue to break that down further as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And speaking of our guests, we mentioned we're going to preview the New Orleans Saints today as we get set for another regular season matchup. And Jeff Duncan is on the line, who covers the team. He's also a columnist for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Jeff, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here with you on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great, guys. That dead period, trying to survive it till we get to camp here in a few weeks.
Yeah, this is the period of time where everybody takes vacation, so we appreciate you joining us on yours.
Yeah, heading over to the beach, over to Florida here, and try and get my mind off the depth chart and all the other things that we go through for a little while until we can dive back in. You know, we head up to West Virginia. The Saints train in a really remote place in the mountains. It's kind of a little bit of a vacation, even though everybody's working their butts off. It's really beautiful there.
All right, so, Jeff, let's kick it off. First and foremost, the Saints last year, probably one of the biggest disappointments in the NFL. I don't think anyone anticipated them to play that poorly or perform that poorly. What went wrong, and what do you feel is going to be so different this year?
Well, you know, they lost a lot of games early. As you all know, the NFL season kind of a lot of times is dictated by how you start the year, and the Saints lost about four games in the last minute, and they just kind of the season got away from them. They feel like the talent level is better than it was a year ago, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They made some drastic moves, as you know, trading Jimmy Graham to try and shore up their offensive line and defense, and they feel like they weren't far away from being a 10 or 11 win team. We know a lot of NFL teams can say that, but this team can still generate points with anybody in the league. And if they can just get better on defense, they think they can push over the top in the NFC South.
And Jeff, speaking of that philosophy, that really brings me to the question as to, from what you've seen over the course of the offseason, some of the moves they've made, you know, has the philosophy changed in New Orleans? Because from watching the Saints year in and year out in recent history, it's almost as if this is the type of team will outscore you, you know, similar to Don Nelson and the Dallas Mavericks. Defense is not necessarily priority number one because our offense is so reliable. Now that they've parted ways with Jimmy Graham, and it seems as if they're bringing in some new defensive personnel, has Mickey Loomis and company shifted gears where the focus now to build this team moving forward is more on defensive principles as opposed to offensive principles?
You know, that's what it looks like in the offseason, but I really don't think so. I think this team, as long as Sean Payton is the coach and Drew Brees is the quarterback, is going to be built around the passing game and, like you said, trying to outscore opponents. Their best teams have been in 2009, 2011, where they would jump on teams early with their offense, get a lead, and then could get really aggressive on defense and create some turnovers. And that's what's been missing. They're never going to be a dominant defensive team the way they play offensive football here. They just need to be more opportunistic, create more big plays. They haven't been able to register enough sacks, create, you know, interceptions, fumbles, that type of thing, since Greg Williams left as coordinator. This is probably a make-or-break year for Rob Ryan, I think, as coordinator, and they have to make drastic improvements on that side of the ball, at least get in the middle of the pack. You know, when you got an offense like the Saints have, they don't have to be a top-10 defense. They just need to be a little more opportunistic, and they think they can get back to that this year. We'll see. I'm still a little in the show-me state mode right now on that defense.
Jeff Duncan joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, as everyone knows, of course, previewing all the Giants' opponents this coming season, and we're focusing on the Saints right now. Obviously, the biggest question mark is going to be at that tight end position. Jimmy Graham, such a vital part of that success and the chemistry between him and Drew Brees. He's gone now, of course, helping Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks win some games. Talk about his replacement, Benjamin Watson. Is there another name on this roster that you feel is going to have to step up? How's that tight end role going to play a factor into this offense this season?
Well, I think Ben Watson is going to end up being just kind of the backup, to be honest with you. Josh Hill, the young tight end that went undrafted a few years ago that they're really high on. And, look, no one is going to be Jimmy Graham. They don't have that player on the roster. Very few teams do. They're going to replace him by committee. They've gone back, and if you look at the Saints' best teams, they haven't had a dominant go-to person. They don't have a Rob Gronkowski-type guy. They spread the ball around. Everybody gets involved. They kind of do it democratically on offense, and that's what I think they're going to try and go back to this year. They've got a lot of good young receivers that a lot of people don't know about. Brandon Coleman from Rutgers, who they're very high on. Chontavious Jones. Just some no-name guys, Nick Toon. That's who's going to, I think, fill in. No, there's not going to be one guy, but I do think they're going to struggle, and it's going to be a question they have to answer when they get to the red zone, because Jimmy Graham made it so easy down there to score touchdowns, and that's going to be critical for them to replace his production down there.
One of the players in the receiving corps last season that made some big strides in just his rookie campaign was Brandon Cooks, their first-round pick.
Cookie Monster! I love this kid.
Absolutely.
Love him.
Well, you made that very apparent at the beginning of the show.
I know. I just wanted to let Jeff know, I mean, how crazy I am about it. So sad to see him get injured last season, especially since I owned him on the majority of my fantasy football roster.
Now we're getting to the heart of the issue.
Exactly.
See, we were beating around the bush a little bit, but now obviously it had some fantasy implications. But getting back to the point, Jeff, he certainly made his name known throughout the receiving corps last season and then suffered the season-ending injury. Number one, how has his rehab been going, and what type of a role do you see him having in the receiving corps now that a guy like Jimmy Graham is no longer there, Marcus Colston is getting up there in age? I mean, does he have the ability to become the go-to wide receiver this season?
Well, I think he's going to get that opportunity. We'll see if he can take advantage of it. He has to stay healthy, like you said. He looked like he was on his way to a big year a year ago. I think this year with Graham out of the picture, he's going to get the bulk of the receptions. Now, how much he distances himself from the rest of the pack, I don't know. But he's looked great this offseason. Again, they're running around in, you know, shorts and jerseys. They're not in pads yet. But he looks like the best player in their perimeter core by far. He looks very confident, like most second-year players do at this stage of their careers. And I think Drew Brees is going to give him every opportunity to show that he can be a number one guy with Marcus Colston kind of aging and taking a step back at this stage of his career. Cooks is not a big guy, though, so he's not the dominant type of true number one receiver we're used to seeing. But I think the emergence of guys like T.Y. Hilton, he's more of that type of player, I think. And if you have him in your fantasy team still, Anita, and you have a keeper league, I would definitely keep him because I think he's poised for a big year.
Yeah, so do I. So do I. Let's talk about the running back situation. It's really fascinating to me. I think each and every year we're seeing more and more teams get so much more depth in their backfield. It's no longer just that workhorse anymore, that cowbell kind of runner. It's by committee. And, you know, you lead with Mark Ingram, who's coming off an amazing season last year. I felt last year was the year that he had to turn that corner, and sure enough, he did. Then you add C.J. Spiller from Buffalo, Robinson solid, Tim Hightower solid. There are a lot of really solid running backs. Is the philosophy, because you've got so much talent back there, do you think the philosophy is going to change at all in some regard to run-first mentality as opposed to a pass-happy Saints team?
You know, I don't think it will. I think what Sean Payton does when he attacks a team each week is he looks at the weaknesses and wants to have enough bullets in the holster at various aspects of the offensive attack to be able to take advantage of it, and that's what this offseason was about. I think they wanted to get back to finding that satellite back that they missed in Darren Sproles and Reggie Bush. That's what C.J. Spiller is going to be. He may even be more productive than those guys if he could stay healthy, but they want to have the balance on offense to win. They go up against an opponent that maybe isn't as good against the run, that they can attack them there And so I don't think it's going to change philosophically over the course of a year, but maybe down the stretch in December when you're trying to win those tough games on the road in cold weather environments, now they may have the balance to win those games and potentially get in the playoffs. You know, when we talk about the NFC playoffs, you've got to be able to go on the road and look at the teams you have to play. Usually it's Seattle, Green Bay, potentially Philadelphia. You've got to be able to win those games in bad weather and in potentially not be able to win with the passing game. And I think that's what they've tried to get back to on offense.
And big part of offensive production, Jeff, as you know, is the play of the offensive line. And one of the things you touched on off the top in that Jimmy Graham deal, they did look to bolster the offensive line by getting Max Unger in return. And Drew Brees has seen his fair share of pressure over the last few seasons. I believe they gave up 30 sacks last season. That was still in the middle of the pack. How does this offensive line look heading into this season? And how do you think they'll be able to set the tone so that perhaps they could get a little bit more balance?
Well, it's the biggest question mark on the offense. I mean, they really dropped off a year ago. You mentioned getting Max Unger. That's going to certainly be an upgrade at center. But they're still long in the tooth on the right side. Zach Streif and Jari Evans, you know, they're entering their 10th season. They've been great performers for this team, but they've really started to show their age as far as injuries concerned. And we all see that start to happen at players at that point in their career. So if they can stay healthy, you know, we mentioned staying healthy a bunch of times in this interview, but they have to stay healthy on the offensive line because they don't have much depth there. They drafted Andres Pete out of Stanford in the first round. He's going to be the backup at both tackle spots. He's a very young player, a junior, came out very young. I'm not sure he's ready to just be thrown to the wolves, but they've got to get better in the offensive line. Drew Brees was pressured and sacked more than he's ever been the last couple of years. And that's resulted in a lot of forced throws and uncharacteristic mistakes by Brees. So they've got to get better protection. I think that was the impetus for that Jimmy Graham trade. They wouldn't have made it if they couldn't get Max Unger. Now they've got it. They feel so confident in their offensive mastermind and Sean Payton that he can generate offense with the perimeter core and Drew Brees at quarterback. That's why I think they wanted to go about trying to improve that offensive line. But again, we'll see how it plays out. I'm not yet ready to jump on the bandwagon because I saw how they dropped off a year ago.
In looking at the NFC South, unbelievable. Carolina makes it to the playoffs with a 7-8 record. New Orleans 7-9, Atlanta 6-10, Tampa 2-14. You got to assume that all these teams looking to improve this season. How do you see this division playing out? As we know, Tampa with Jameis Winston, rookie quarterback, Atlanta with a new regime there. Carolina with some added weapons as well. You've got Cam Newton with a new deal, new money, more inspiration to perform well based on him being one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. So how do you see this division playing out this season?
Well, I think it's going to be wide open again with Tampa Bay being probably still a year away from contention. But between Atlanta, Carolina, and New Orleans, I think you could flip a coin and see who's going to get the breaks in those matchups, who's going to stay healthy. I think Dan Quinn will bring about some new energy in Atlanta. I think they're very dangerous because I feel like they've got a ton of potential. They've got a lot of talent on defense that hasn't really matured yet. Carolina, I think, is going to look to be probably the front runner or at least considered the favorite early on. I know that Cam Newton was not near 100% a year ago. He was playing injured. So that should be scary for most of the opponents if he comes back 100% because he's such a dynamic weapon. But this division doesn't have anybody, I think, ready to challenge the elite of the NFC. I think you look at Green Bay and Seattle and potentially Dallas or Philadelphia. I don't think there's anybody in this division yet that's ready to make that jump into that group. But I do think that the division should be on the way up because they've added so many dynamic young weapons now with Jameis Winston and Mike Evans down in Tampa. You got Kelvin Benjamin in Carolina and the offensive firepower they have in Atlanta. There's reason, I think, for everybody to be optimistic, but just nobody that stands out right now.
Talking with Jeff Duncan, who covers the Saints, also a columnist for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Jeff, one of the areas you mentioned that the Saints looked to revamp was defense, clearly because of their struggles. And the one area of this defense that jumps out to me in terms of new faces, some players returning from injury, is the secondary. You know, Jarris Byrd hopefully will be healthy this season. Brandon Browner was added in free agency. You know, what have you seen out of the dynamics of the secondary during the course of OTAs and minicamp? And specifically, a guy like Kenny Vaccaro, who had a good rookie year, but sort of hit that sophomore slump. Where does he stand in terms of the nucleus of this secondary right now?
Well, Vaccaro has to have a bounce-back year, and they're banking on the return of Jarris Bird. You know, he was a critical loss for this team a year ago. They paid him a lot of money in free agency, was a Pro Bowl-caliber player, and he got knocked out early in the season, and it forced Kenny Vaccaro into a role that he's not comfortable playing, more of a free safety on the back end, center fielder. That's not his strength. So he now will go back to being what he's at best, playing closer to the line of scrimmage in more of a joker position. And I think the addition of Brandon Browner at the other corner spot opposite Keenan Lewis solidifies that spot. He certainly had some question marks a year ago, led the league in penalties, and only 9 games he had 16 penalties, which he's got to clean up. But they feel they've got a host of other guys at cornerback, and that's where this team has to get better. They have to get better in coverage. I think they've got the makings of a decent front seven, but the back end has to make more plays on the ball. They were just atrocious there a year ago, and they're hoping that Browner can lend some leadership there while these young candidates they have at the other cornerback spot can come along. Big question mark, no question.
And before we let you go, Jeff, one other issue, at least on defense, that was notable last year, a significant drop off in terms of their ability to get to the quarterback, pressure overall. Now, Junior Gallette, who had 2 years ago a very impressive season, somewhat falls off, as well as the rest of the group. How much confidence do they have that Rob Ryan is going to help restore what has been a big part of that defensive line over the last few years?
Well, those guys have to bounce back. The thing I guess you can hang your hat on if you're a Saints fan is they've proven they can do it. Cameron Jordan went to the Pro Bowl 2 years ago, had a big year. He just signed a huge contract, so pressure's on for him to produce. Akeem Hicks is an extremely talented guy that looked like he was on the verge of a breakout year going into last year and really dropped off, like you said. Those guys, if they can bounce back to closer to what they were in 2013 when this team ranked in the top 5 defensively, they feel like that'll take some of the pressure off the back end because they'll be able to rush the quarterback and maybe take him off his mark. Those guys have to bounce back, but Junior Gallette's status is uncertain right now. I mean, he's got a domestic violence charge against him, hasn't been ruled on by the league office, but I think the franchise is worried about that situation. That's why they went out in the draft and signed Haloi Kakaha and Kasim Edebali, a second-year player. They've got a lot of young guys, Davis Toll, that they hope will be insurance in case Gallette's not around. But if they don't have Gallette, they've got huge question marks on pressure in the passer. And you know what it's like in this league. If you can't put some pressure on the quarterback, it doesn't matter how good your back end is.
Absolutely. They work hand in hand. Jeff Duncan, who covers the Saints, columnist for the New Orleans Times-Picayune, kind enough to give us a few minutes. Jeff, greatly appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the vacay.
Will do. Always fun, and you guys have a great rest of the day.
Jeff, thank you so much.
So Jeff Duncan breaking down the New Orleans Saints, who Anita mentioned. The Giants will visit November 1st, the 1 p.m. Eastern kickoff as it stands right now. And, you know, you brought up the fact that they're heading to New Orleans. And one thing that's been somewhat of an issue for the Giants, Anita, over the last few years, when going to New Orleans to play the Saints, hasn't been too comfortable for the Giants. When the Saints come here, it seems to be
what
a different
What is their record?
Story.
I don't mean to put you on the
hot seat. I don't
know
off the top of my head the exact record in terms of head-to-head, but I do know off the top of my head that recent games in New Orleans at the Dome have not turned out too well for the Giants, whereas if you recall, they had a very good performance here, the Giants, when David Wilson jumped out on special teams.
It's a very difficult venue to play at.
Absolutely.
All right, that what is it, Houdat?
That Houdat Nation,
them, of course, traveling to Seattle. Seattle's a difficult place to play. Kansas City is a difficult Arrowhead. That's a very difficult venue to play at. I'm trying to think. So I'd say those are the three, really, right? Am I missing one? I think those are the three
most.
Well,
in terms of indoor, did you mention Kansas City? Kansas City's a very tough place to play.
Kansas City.
That one I would throw out as the top of the list.
The Saints and Seattle. Three of the most difficult venues to play at.
I mean, Indianapolis, I think you could throw within that territory, depending on, obviously, what the environment is like. But any of those domes where you've got the fans compacted in close proximity and they really fill up those venues, I mean, it's tough. You really have to be aware of the signals and the calls so that you can still have a fluid offense. And that is something that the Giants have worked on for years in terms of Eli Manning and the leadership that he brings to the table, because you never know what type of environment you're going to go in. The Giants recently went to Kansas City, and I remember coming out of that game when Victor Cruz had a lengthy touchdown, talking about how difficult it was to sometimes hear the signals because of sometimes the challenges that that environment presents. We're going to reopen up the phone lines here the rest of the way. So if you're on hold and you dropped off, you give us a ring back, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Gordon is in Pennsylvania. Gordon, what's happening?
Hi, guys. I just wanted to talk about the tight ends.
Sure. What do you have?
I just wanted to point out that, like, Larry Donnell, this is his second year going in with Eli Manning, and the Giants haven't really had much luck bringing back tight ends for a second year with Eli Manning. Like, Martellus Bennett and Brandon Myers, they kind of both started to get a little bit hot coming in with Eli Manning at the end of the seasons, and then they left. And I think that the second year with Larry Donnell will be a big boost for Eli Manning, and I think he'll probably be second or third on touchdowns with the Giants.
Well, if he's able to pick up where he left off last season, he certainly is going to be a big target in this offense. And the fact that you hope Victor Cruz is fully healthy, Beckham picks up where he left off, you know, Donnell should have some favorable matchups, I think, over the course of this season. One thing I wanted to note, you did bring up a good point that there's been a lot of turnover at the tight end position, but keep in mind that was because of how some of those contracts were structured, where a number of those tight ends were given one-year deals. So as a result, depending on the market and some guys that are working within the system, you look to bring up so that perhaps you don't have to necessarily invest more in a free agent tight end who's going to command a lot of money on the open market like Martellus Bennett did with the deal he got with the Chicago Bears. So the fact that, yes, Eli Manning now is going to come off his second straight year working with a same tight end, I think that should help for the sake of the continuity on offense.
Yep. And also, I just wanted to ask about Jake Long.
Do
you know if he can play right tackle?
Well, Jake Long is versatile enough where you can move him around. The key question here, and Anita and I had discussed this the last few days, is health. You know, where does he stand right now in terms of the knees? And he's had some surgeries, he's had some injuries over the course of his career. I mean, in terms of is he an ideal fit for right tackle versus left tackle, you know, most of those veteran tackles who have played left tackle, keep in mind, started out at right tackle at one point in their career or were moved around in college, because it's very rare in this day and age that you see a premier left tackle in college start out on the left side in the NFL. So I don't really think adjustment in terms of what side you put him on is going to be an issue. It's just a matter of health-wise, is he durable enough to last throughout a season?
Yeah, I kind of believe in Marshall Newhouse anyway. They got him for a reason, so he can play.
And I'm not necessarily going to disagree with that sentiment. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for waiting, Gordon.
Thank you for the phone call. But you know, the reason that they went out and brought him in was to be that sixth lineman to come off the bench, not to necessarily start at the right tackle position. But I think it's an interesting question is if, like, hypothetically, Jake Long's knee passes the test for the Giants and they sign him and they bring him in, can he play right tackle? Or do you move Jeff Schwartz to right tackle, which he can play, and he's communicated to me that he's willing to play if he is asked to play it, and keep Jake Long at the guard position? That's going to be really interesting to see how that right side of the line develops. We don't know, obviously. And then it's interesting that he had brought up the tight end position. You know, I mean, how many shows go by that we really don't talk about Larry Donnell being a part of this passing attack? It's kind of like he's fallen by the wayside, and not a knock on him. It's just that there's so much excitement about Odell Beckham Jr., so much excitement about Victor Cruz getting healthy, so much excitement about Shane Vereen being a part of the passing attack, that I think we kind of have forgotten that there is that Larry Donnell dimension at the tight end position, right?
Well, I think that's a good thing, though, at least for his sake, because if you're a defense and you need to scout the Giants, Anita, you're right. You're consumed right now with what the receiving corps brings to the table, the running game. So if Donnell gets lost in the mix, then, like I said, I think he's going to present him with some favorable opportunities. And the key for him is to show consistency and also become a well-rounded tight end who can assist also on the blocking front. I think that's probably one of his top priorities this offseason. He's spoken about that he wants to be known as not just a receiving tight end, but a guy that they can line up on the offensive line. So, you know, he's very young. There's still a great deal of upside. It's not as if he's been in the league for 10 years, but I think you're right. When you focus on the Giants offense, everybody is caught up on the names, the household names at the receiving core, and the tight end position seems to be sort of an afterthought. And as I mentioned, if the rest of the league treats it that way, Larry Donnell, as we saw last season, either when nobody knew who he was, they didn't necessarily give him a lot of attention. He had the 3-touchdown game against the Washington Redskins. He was a consistent weapon throughout the early stages of the season. Then all of a sudden, defenses started to take notice of him. And like any other young player, you have to make adjustments yourself. So if he doesn't see as much attention, I think that's probably where he'd start to flourish if all the guys on the ends and the running backs take away some of the coverage from him.
Oh, absolutely. And again, with the positive kind of hope that Victor Cruz will be 100%, that's going to be tough. If you have Larry Donnell kind of coming out and looking for space in that same area that Victor Cruz likes to occupy, defenses are going to have to make a decision on what to do. So I even think that the opportunity for Larry Donnell to have an even bigger season, whoever might be starting at the tight end position, might have a bigger season this year with a healthy Victor Cruz, because both of them kind of like that same area, the middle of the field. They're not scared to go and kind of dominate and try to create space in that same area. So defensive strong safeties, linebackers, they're going to have to make a decision with a healthy Victor Cruz.
And remember, Ben McAdoo coming over from Green Bay operated in a system when there were a lot of weapons in need. So, you know, I mean, he's familiar with that, and it makes sense that he'd want to adopt similar philosophies here with the Giants. I understand that he wasn't the offensive coordinator when he was at Green Bay, but he was the tight ends coach. He worked with the quarterbacks. He was a big part of that offense and how it operated. So he's taken a lot out of Green Bay, and I'm sure he's saying to himself, wow, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, what he had to work with in need, the tight ends, the running backs, John Kuhn as a fullback, how they utilize somebody like that. Now he's got a number of players in his arsenal that he can work with in terms of big picture plays, and I'm sure there's a lot of tricks that he has up his sleeve to highlight specific players. And as you mentioned, maybe one of those pieces of paper that he has in his book is dedicated to Larry Donnell and how to better utilize Larry Donnell with all the attention going elsewhere on the field.
Absolutely.
It'll be certainly fun to watch. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the phone lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, good morning or good afternoon, folks. How you doing?
Doing well, Len. What's happening with you?
Good. Well, hanging in there. Can't wait for camp to start. And, boy, it's getting close.
It is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
End of the month.
Yeah, terrific. Exciting time of the year. Listen, I want to go on record if I haven't already done this. I want JPP back. And I know, you know, there are circumstances and so forth, but I want this guy back. And part of my motivation, maybe 25% of it, 75% of it is I think he's a terrific player. 25% of it is I don't believe the Giants agreed under the salary cap to pay this guy $14.8 million because they thought he was chopped liver. I think the Giants believe this guy is a dynamic, three-down defensive threat who pulls together the rest of the defensive line. Or else they wouldn't have offered him $14.8 million under the tender. I mean, it would have made absolutely no sense. No sense whatsoever. So I want this guy back, and I know they've got to work things out with him at this point, and I hope they do, and I hope it happens sooner, although I don't think it's going to happen today. And Lance, to feed into something that you said earlier, you know, about deadlines and so forth, about when he could, you know, when he might sign and so forth, and what the deadline dates are, and I know today is one deadline, but it's probably going to pass without a signing. You know, you get out to week 10, and if he hasn't signed the tender by then, Lance, and maybe you can help me with this, but if he hasn't signed the tender by then, he actually rolls over another year with the franchise tag. Now, the Giants can pull it, but he's automatically tied to the Giants for another year. But I think there is a salary increase. I think it's at 120%. So
correct.
Salary,
well, that's normally what happens for any position.
Yeah.
If you give them the franchise tag in consecutive years, yes, the percentage of their previous year's salary goes up exponentially.
Yeah, yes. So I think the real deadline is week 10. Now, there was a time way back, and I wish Paul was here to verify this, but and this takes you back 30 years, but it's a similar situation. The Giants had a defensive back, terrific player, named Mark Haynes. And this was, before the cap, and George Young was the general manager. And Mark Haynes held out. He didn't come back until, the last few games of the season when the last date, or else he would have carried over again as Giants property for the next year. He came back. He didn't do much. He played in spots for the Giants at the last five or six. I think it was 1985. And I think the Giants traded him in the offseason to Denver. And interestingly enough, the Giants played the Broncos in that 86 Super Bowl, and Haynes was on the other side of the field. But we have had circumstances where people have held out that long and waiting for it to happen. I hope that's not JPP's situation.
Well, I think we're getting extremely ahead of ourselves, Len. I understand you're playing the hypotheticals, the coulda, wouldas, the worst-case scenarios, but I think to anticipate that this could carry on till week 10 is really getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, obviously, you would assume both sides would want to make sure that everything is status quo by the time training camp rolls around as well as the regular season.
All right, now, Lance, please. Are you trying to tell me that Giants management right now aren't playing the what-if game about week 10? Come on.
Listen, Len, I don't know. I can't tell you who's getting ahead of myself.
But if they're not doing that, Lance, that's poor management. I'm not saying they're expecting it to happen, but I think they're playing the what-if game. And they got a number of things that they're trying to work their way through. Again, if it isn't, I'll say this out loud, bad management on the part of the Giants.
Len,
they better be.
Len, let me just. Folks have to understand something, that this is uncharted territory. The Giants have no idea right now. The Giants camp has not seen JPP. There's no evaluation. It's kind of just in the dark right now. So to sit here and say that that's bad management, you know what? This is an organization that just wants to get in front of their player so that they can assess what is going on. So I don't know, with all due respect, I don't know how you can do that as an organization if you don't have the facts and the information in front of you. They have no idea.
Are you telling me let's go back to this. Are you telling me that the Giants are sitting there and saying, well, we just have to wait to see what JPP does next?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all.
That's not what I'm saying at all.
What I'm saying is that before the Giants can put together a game plan on how to handle the JPP situation, they have to meet with him. They have to assess the situation. Their doctors have to see JPP and evaluate the hand and have an idea of what has transpired here. That's all I'm saying. They flew two people down there and they hung out down there for a few days to try to get in the door to meet with him. You can't knock the organization, Lynn. They're doing everything they can.
Anita, you're missing my point. Do you not think that the Giants are looking that far forward? That they're not looking at the possibility that he won't walk into week 10 in order for them to make a decision? I think you're wrong on that.
Well,
I think you're wrong.
I'm sure they're evaluating any scenario that might take place.
You.
That's not what I'm saying, though.
I understand what you're saying.
You're coming up with a lot of hypotheticals, but I guess what I'm countering with is, let's get to training camp. Let's get to week one before we start setting up hypotheticals for week 9 and week 10. You know, you're thinking like 3-4 months down the road when training camp hasn't even started. For all we know, things get settled before week one even comes around, and you don't have to play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game. I mean, of course, anybody right now should be thinking about the worst-case scenario, but, you know, to talk about week 10 and anticipate what's going to happen in November when training camp hasn't even started, I mean, that's why I'm saying I think you're getting really ahead of yourself there, even in the hypothetical situations.
Well, Are you telling me that you don't want to talk about the hypothetical, or that Giants have not thought about the hypothetical?
Well, I can't speak for the Giants organization in terms of who thought about what hypothetical.
All
so
point,
let's straighten that out
was,
first.
I thought, my only point was, Lance, on this issue, that I thought they were. And I thought they better be, because it just might come up. And they better have a game plan. They better not be doing this day by day. They better have an idea of what they should do if it gets that far along. If it gets that far along. Let me ask you this. I can't believe, I guess another reason why I want the Giants to wait as long as possible and pay JPP the $14.8 million. Hopefully it turns out to be that much. Maybe it's going to be less if they get him on that not football injury list. I don't know what's going to happen there. But again, I'm looking forward a little bit here, Lance. But
oh, I could tell.
And everybody says the 14.8, the 14.8. Now, you know, if we pull the tag now, we got 14.8. We can give Eli, we can give Princeton new contracts. Don't you think the Giants have worked that? Do you think the Giants have worked out Eli and Prince somewhere in their mind, based on the fact that JPP was going to get 14.8? I can't believe. I think they want to pay JPP $14.8 million for the season.
I mean,
and I think they got Eli. I think they got a plan for Eli, and they got a plan for Prince. And they don't. I don't want to say they don't need, but I'll say it anyway. They don't need the $14.8 million to carry that out. Again, in my mind, that would be good management.
Well, I'm sure things are planned for the future, Len. Yep. Listen, appreciate the phone call. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a terrible assumption. You have to think ahead. You have to think about how rookie contracts factor in, who's going to be a free agent next season. Keep in mind, the Giants, with respect to their defensive line, and I've mentioned this time and time again, you know, Barry Cofield is heading towards free agency. They draft Linville Joseph. Linville Joseph is heading towards free agency. They draft Jonathan Hankins. So those are perfect examples that they anticipate things far in advance.
Breaking news, Adam Schefter is reporting that the Kansas City Chiefs have signed linebacker Justin Houston to a six-year, $101 million deal that includes $52.5 million in guaranteed money.
So that's one player that's given the franchise tag.
So now he's off the tag.
Correct. Exactly. Well, it's no
surprise.
So
you still have Dez, you still have Demaryius Thomas, and you still have JPP.
I'm sure there'll be a few other players that could very well get deals done before the deadline, as there's about 3 hours left before we get to 4 p.m. Eastern. So I'm sure throughout the course of the day we'll hear plenty of reports. Let's head back to the phone lines here. AJ is in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I had a question about Bert Hay. Do you think he would be ready for a training camp?
Well, based on what Tom Coughlin had mentioned during the course of training camp, AJ, and appreciate the phone call, he's dealing with a calf injury, so they don't anticipate it being a serious injury that's going to keep him out for a long period of time. Every indication, at least if you read through the fine print and what the coaching staff has said, is that Nat Burhe should be ready for the start of training camp. And I go back to some of the quotes that he mentioned when the team came to the facility for the first time for off-season workouts. He's hungry, and he's motivated to win that starting job. You know, one of the statements that he mentioned that jumps out to me, he says he would not be here if they did not think highly of him. So he clearly sees the writing on the wall. He sees the opportunity. Unfortunately, the calf injury is what held him back during off-season workouts, but I don't see it holding him back once training camp starts.
No, I think it's going to be one of the most interesting battles that I think we're going to see at training camp. I think him and Bennett Jackson are really going to go at it to try to win that that safety spot. And I do believe Burhe will win it. But I think that's going to be one of the training camp battles that Giants fans should really pay a lot of attention to.
Let's take a look at Twitter here, and we'll continue to squeeze in a call or two as we approach the top of the hour. Big Dash 07088 at ColeWiss88. Does Jerome Cunningham have a real chance at making the 53? Cunningham was one of the standout players during OTAs and minicamp. He really made play after play when they ran their team drills, whether it be 7-on-7 and so forth. So I think he has a very good shot at making this roster. You look at the tight ends, and Anita, we got into it a little bit earlier with respect to Larry Dinell. You know, past Larry Dinell, Daniel Fells was very productive last season. But then you get towards the tail end of the depth chart. I think there's a number of opportunities for just about everybody that's in camp. Will Ty's another guy out of Stony Brook who's a big presence, who has had limited reps, but, you know, watch out for him during training camp, and he may make somewhat of a statement. But Cunningham has really stood out when you look at some of the guys behind the Donnells and the Fells of the world.
Yeah, I think there's going to be – going into training camp, I think it's Larry Donnell's position to lose – based on what he brought to the program last year. But I think there is going to be some competition there, and I think it's going to up his game. I think it's going to up everybody's game based on the talent that they brought in and that are going to be competing. So that's going to be another interesting position battle where, for example, I think the safety position, I don't think it's anybody's position to lose. I think it's a battle for the position, where the tight end position, I think it's Larry Donnell's position to lose, but it's going to be pretty competitive.
Let's go back to Twitter here. Joe Henderson at Jendy underscore Hendy. With the addition of Harris, referring to Dwayne Harris, do you expect OBJ to still get special teams reps, or will the coaches look to protect him? It's hard to say how much he'll get looks at on special teams. I know that during the course of the offseason, they mentioned that obviously they were holding him back because of the hamstring injury. They didn't necessarily say once he comes back, we're no longer going to utilize him on special teams. Dwayne Harris certainly moves ahead of him on the depth chart because of his strength on special teams. I could see Odell Beckham getting some looks in terms of workouts, and they'll have him return something here or there, but I would say that Dwayne Harris right now is the front runner to lock down that job, and they're probably going to look for some of the other backup wide receivers to take on more reps as opposed to perhaps throwing Odell Beckham right back into the fire because of some of the depth and some of the new opportunities that are going to be presented to some of the other players. So, you know, goal number one is to get Beckham fully healthy so that he's ready to take his wide receiver reps during training camp. Yeah, anything else outside of that I think is a bonus, but I don't think that they're going to showcase him that much on special teams, even during simple workouts during the course of training camp. Let's head back to the lines. Elijah is in Connecticut. Elijah, what's happening?
How you guys doing? I just wanted to let you know I'm a fan of the show.
Appreciate it.
And I listen to you guys whenever I can get the chance.
Thanks so much. So what do you have for us?
The question I have for you guys is, are you guys a believer of the spread offense in the NFL? And what I mean by that is Chip Kelly has brought his offense to the NFL. And me being a Giants fan, I have seen our defense, Giants fans don't kill me, get shredded up by his offense. So I know we just changed offense, and Eli is prime for a big year in the second-year offense, but I wanted to know if you guys are a believer in that Chip Kelly system.
Well, in terms of what it's going to showcase, you're saying moving forward, that it will continue to...
Yeah, like, do you think, since the NFL is a copycat league, do you think that more teams will implement some of his offenses, teams?
All right, well, a few things, because I think you threw out a few interesting questions. Number one, I am a huge fan of Chip Kelly. I'm a huge fan of his system, and I'm so intrigued to see how Sam Bradford is going to fit that system. Also, I think Philadelphia has arguably the best running back core in the NFL, with DeMarco Murray now making his way to Philadelphia. Ryan Matthews goes from San Diego. If Ryan Matthews can stay healthy, and then their third running back is Darren Sproles, to me is just ridiculous. He went out. He's got some young, upcoming talent at the wide receiver position. I think this year, Ertz is going to be his year at the tight end position. I think he takes another step up. I really do believe that this offense has the ability to be pretty lethal. So I'm really intrigued to see what they can do, first and foremost. In regard to a copycat league, I'm with you. The NFL is a copycat league, but I think it's difficult to copycat what really is a very unique system. I don't think other teams in the NFL would be able to copycat this system without totally knowing, understanding, and being able to execute offensively what Chip has been able to do. And on top of that, Chip has purposely gone out and built and has drafted and has recruited the talent that in order to execute this system properly. So and that would be, like, in my opinion, years in the making to be able to do that. I mean, you know, Chip was given really the reins this year to go out and be the decision maker in drafting talent and bringing in talent. So, you know, I think so. Two things. I think the Philadelphia Eagles offense is going to be pretty electric and pretty difficult to stop, number one. And number two, I think it would be very difficult for other teams in the NFL to be able to copycat what Chip is doing in Philadelphia.
The other thing to keep in mind, to get back to your question, Elijah, and I'll let you continue, is, you know, as crafty and creative as Chip Kelly's system is, you know, you still need the offensive line to be consistent and play at a high level.
Right.
Notice that last season, you know, the Eagles suffered a number of injuries on their offensive line, and that's why there was somewhat of inconsistency in terms of the running game. So, you know, I still get back to the fact that the basic principles in terms of how you're going to build a team and what you need to function correctly still applies to Chip Kelly's system like it does any other offensive system in the National Football League. So you still have to have health. You still have to have a good offensive line, a good running back, and a healthy quarterback. And some of those question marks, I think, are apparent right now in Philadelphia.
But also, and just to interject here, one thing Chip Kelly has done is he's implemented, you know, an unbelievable, like, dietary program. He's implemented, like, a dude who's overseeing the Navy SEALs in regard to staying healthy and monitoring their testosterone levels, and should they practice on this day? Are their testosterone levels down? Do they need a break? Like it's unbelievable all the outside kind of elements that he's brought in, and the experts and the people to monitor the health of his team. And I don't have the stat in front of me, but I want to say that I think the Eagles had like the healthiest core players last year than any other team in the NFL, right?
I don't know off the top of my head.
At least in the top five, based on, you know, all the kind of the experts that Chip Kelly has brought into that system to monitor the players, from their eating habits to their sleeping habits to their testosterone levels to a number of things.
Because the reason why I bring up the whole offense thing is because we switched to a West Coast offense. And I watch a lot of Auburn film. And basically what I take from their plays, I'm going back to college, is that basically they run what I think looks like kind of a West Coast with some trickery with it. So me being a Giants fan, I wonder, after Eli Manning, I always like to see a mobile quarterback, because I feel like with the addition of Shane Vereen and we have explosive receivers with Cruz and Beckham, if we can implement stuff with Auburn with a mobile quarterback, I feel like our offense can be extremely dynamic and we can put up a lot of points. I understand that we ranked, I think, in the top 10.
Correct.
Last year,
yeah, the offense was in the top 10, even with not necessarily having a mobile quarterback. So, I mean, I think you need to at least put things in perspective. It's flashy. It's nice to have a mobile quarterback. And, Elijah, appreciate the phone call. And it's an understandable point that you're making. But, you know, as the Giants' offense showcased in year one under Ben McAdoo, specifically in the last few games, you know, we started to see what the true potential of this offense can be. And Eli Manning doesn't necessarily have to run in the offense for it to click. So, you know, it really depends on the personnel you have, how you want to maximize the talent of that personnel grouping. And I think McAdoo has found that with respect to this Giants grouping, and you hope that they can continue to take the next step. For that offense to finish in the top 10, given some of the inconsistencies and the lack of a consistent running game, I think it says a lot about how far along this Giants offense has come in just really 1 year under Ben McAdoo. Want to close out the program on one last tweet here, because it is related to some of the CBA clarifications and so forth with respect to the franchise tag. And in case you're just joining us, we can go over the specific facts. Anthony in Phoenix says, you know, can you please explain the Giants' options they have with the JPP situation? So in terms of facts, and, you know, this is not speculation. We don't know in terms of the talks what's going on. But July 15th is today, 4 p.m. Eastern is the deadline. Any player that was given a franchise tag has to come to a long-term contract agreement. If that doesn't happen by 4 p.m. Eastern, then that player has to play out the remainder of this season on the franchise tag. You can't all of a sudden decide in week five that you're going to work out a long-term deal. So if 4 p.m. Eastern passes and both sides don't work out a long-term contract, that is no longer an option moving forward. That means that then you go to the franchise tag. In terms of the options that the Giants have, the ball is really in JPP's court. Once he signs the franchise tender, then the Giants have him under contract. You can rescind the franchise tag as an organization, and you can do that until the player signs the franchise tender. So as long as JPP doesn't sign the franchise tender, that option still exists. How likely it is, once again, Yeah,
but
if
the Giants rescind the franchise
tag,
become
an unrestricted free
agent.
Then
he becomes a unrestricted free agent, and he can go and play for someone else.
Which is unlikely to happen.
I don't think the Giants are going to do until they can assess the situation and see exactly how damaged his hand is. And that's what really needs to happen here, is that the Giants need to get in the door.
So that's why that option, though, does exist in terms of the CBA, at least. And that's really what I'm here. I'm not saying the percentage of one option being favored over another. The bottom line is 4 p.m. Eastern passes, then you have the option of JPP signs the franchise tender, you rescind the franchise tender, or you come to some other financial agreement within the realm of the franchise tender. But the long-term deal option is completely off the table past 4 p.m. Eastern today. So those are at least some of the CBA type of things that they have to play out.
And two things I want to end the show on, and that is tonight is the ESPYs, which I'm really excited for. And Odell Beckham Jr. is out in Los Angeles because he's been nominated for two ESPYs. One is the best play, and of course we've seen it over and over again, and that's, I call it the claw, the catch, whatever. I think that's a slam dunk. I think he wins that. Okay. The other award he's up for is I'm trying to think how they...
You said breakout athlete?
Breakout,
something like that?
Yeah, I want to say it's best breakthrough athlete. Now, listen, I've said this before. I've never seen a star, a player whose star has risen so quickly as I have with Odell Beckham Jr. He took the sports universe by storm last year. He absolutely did. But he's up against Jordan Spieth. And this is the only reason why I think he might have an issue here in regard to winning that ESPY against Jordan Spieth. And that's because Jordan Spieth, A, is what have you done for me lately? He's kind of in our face right now. He just came off of winning the John Deere Classic. And he's now in England. He's about to, of course, try to win the third leg of a career Grand Slam at the British Open. And I think for all those reasons, I think it might be a tough ESPY for Odell Beckham to win, just because it's kind of like Spieth is so relevant right now, today, tomorrow. He tees off, I want to say, at like 4:22 a.m., and that would be the only reason. But obviously a lot of Giants fans, as well as myself and all of us here, are going to be rooting for Odell to win both ESPYs. I think he's definitely got one in the bag. I think it's going to be tough for him to get two.
So we will recap if Odell Beckham does take some hardware home tonight. We'll be back on tomorrow with another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll focus on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we'll continue to take your phone calls on a variety of different Giants topics. And that's going to be the final show for the week. There is no program on Friday with our facilities closed, so then we will resume our normal programming on Monday. Appreciate everybody for watching, listening, tuning in, no matter what you're using, whether it be the internet, your laptop, your mobile device. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Metal. We'll speak to you on Thursday. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got the field. He's got through. 35, 30.